Tell the people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
Uh-uh, we got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble, 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 trouble. 2-4
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Greetings, Toronto. You're listening to Radio Basics. I am your lead host for tonight, Steve DeSilva, and I'm here in the studio with Martin Cook, a special guest host for tonight. What's up, Martin?
How you guys doing?
And also another brother in Basics Free Community Newsletter who everybody tells me and him that we look absolutely identical, including the three programmers from Backroads Radio who didn't believe that we were not twins. So if y'all see one of us in the streets trying to hail up either Martin or Steve, make sure you call us by name so that you don't confuse us. Yeah, that's that. So, Martin, you're on the show with us tonight. We're going to be speaking about school closures in Toronto.
That's right.
We got a couple. Who are we interviewing tonight?
So we got two guests, two trustees who are running for the educational trustees coming up. So Chris Glover and Sam Sotiropoulos.
Are they currently trustees or candidates?
They're candidates.
Candidates, all right. So that's going to be at the top of the show. For now, we got news headlines here on Radio Basics. As y'all may already know, we are the radio wing of Basics Free Community Newsletter, which you can check out at basicsnews.ca, which you may have already seen dropped at your door. We are news for working class people, working for you, serving the people all the time. In headlines for today in local news, Toronto hotel workers are still fighting for their contracts. Since late June, Unite Here, Local 75 hotel workers have been carrying out one-day strikes across Toronto to place pressure on their employer, the multinational hotel conglomerate Westmont Hospitality Group that owns and operates 13 hotels in Toronto alone. Well, what Westmont has done is dramatically cut back on hours and staffing levels. This has meant that people have basically had to work twice as hard as before for the same rate of pay, said Laura Mestra, a room attendant, shop steward, and member of the Unite Here negotiating team. The workers in the union are fighting against the imposition of a contract far worse than their last one. Martin, you were actually at one of those day-long strikes that happened at the opening of the Toronto National Film Festival.
Yeah, that's right.
And I understand Martin Sheen was there, out with the workers, bigging up their strike.
I missed Martin Sheen.
You missed Martin Sheen?
But the workers were out in force and holding down all three doors.
That's tight, man. That's tight. Much respect to all the Unite Here Local 75 workers out there demanding a fair contract. And, of course, how you define fair in this climate is really in accordance with the level of struggle. Anyhow, another local news. Will Rob Ford be Toronto's next mayor? A poll last week suggests that Rob Ford has a support of 46% of decided voters. I'm not really sure what to say here, folks. A man who claims he wants to cut off Toronto from any more refugees, a man who has said in city council that we should have a public lynching of homeless people, a man who has suggested that city council needs to be chopped in half and the remaining funds directed towards the already massively bloated police budget. This man is claiming a dominant lead in the polls. I'm not going to suggest who you should vote for, brothers and sisters, but I'm not actually convinced that the actual economic policies of other leading candidates such as Rossi or Smitherman are really going to look any different in practice than Ford's. But I will insist to all our listeners to do a little more research on this man if you're considering voting for him before you act out your conscience in voting for Rob Ford. Expect some feature-length analyses on this man and the other candidates for the municipal elections coming up at the end of October at basicsnews.ca. Rob Ford is mayor. It's chilling, and sounds like this city is about to get a lot hotter. That's all I got to say on that. In provincial news, nearly 1,000 people attended the memorial of a beloved union leader, Peter Leibovich, in Stony Creek yesterday, just outside Hamilton. Leibovich, who died after rapidly succumbing to a rare type of leukemia, was born in Montreal in 1950 and served for his entire adult life as a militant in the labor movement, defending the rights of workers and exposing Canadian imperialism around the world. In the latter years of his life, he was a vocal opponent of Canadian imperialism in Haiti, as well as Israel's oppression of Palestinians. One of the last major campaigns he was working for was the attempt to organize taxi drivers in Hamilton, amongst whom he commanded great respect. I was actually at his memorial yesterday, and I can't say how many people exactly were there, but it must have been very close to 1,000 at the Leona Gardens Conference and Banquet Center, where two massive banquet rooms were full. Peter, you will be missed by all, and the effects of your work will long outlive you, brother. In federal news, September 26, 1990, 20 years ago yesterday, the armed standoff between Mohawk warriors and the Canadian Army at Oka, Quebec, came to an end when the warriors decided to end the stalemate by burying their guns. The infamous Oka standoff was the result of the attempts of the mayor of Oka to push forward an unpopular golf course and condo development that would have destroyed the ancestral graves and a grove of pine trees held to be important to the Mohawks of Kanasatagi. In response to the plans, the Mohawks set up a peaceful blockade to prevent the development, but were met with the violent interventions of first Quebec's provincial police, Sûreté de Québec, and then the Canadian Army. The standoff was eventually settled when the Mohawks tactically backed down, recognizing that the 78-day standoff had won them the much-needed attention for their struggles for self-determination. Also in federal news, or actually better yet, international news, the Chilcotin Nation has warned all levels of government that they will take direct action if a highly destructive copper gold mine project is approved to move ahead. Our people are willing and ready to defend our lands, Chilcotin Nation Chief Marilyn Baptiste said on September 2, 2010 in the news conference in Ottawa. As one of my elders had said when we were going through the panel hearings, she will be there on the road in her wheelchair. She will have her shotguns and we will not move. Ms. Baptiste said she and others will risk their lives to block the $800 million mining project, which would destroy two lakes that hold approximately 90,000 rainbow trout, an important food source for local bands, turning the lake into a tailings dump for the mining project. The British Columbian government has already approved the project, this despite in late July 2010, a federal review panel ruled that the mine would have, quote, significant adverse environmental effects, and leaving the final decision up to cabinet. On September 24th, Chilcotin Nation representatives exposed the links between the ruling British Columbia Liberal Party and Taseko Mines Limited, which the company pumped over $30,000 into the BC Liberal Party from 2008 onwards. Further, one of the company's directors, Richard Mundy, has signed off on more than $400,000 in donations to the Liberal Party. If British Columbia Liberals go ahead with the mine's development, they will not only be rejecting the warnings of the Federal Department of Fisheries and Oceans, but will place itself on a collision course with the First Nation determined to stand up and fight to defend itself against the destruction of their lands. In international news, FBI raids anti-war activists' homes and organizations in Minneapolis, Chicago, Michigan, and North Carolina. Under the pretext of looking for links to terrorist organizations, on the morning of Friday, September 24th, the FBI broke into 8 homes and offices throughout the U.S. at exactly 7 a.m., seizing computers, phones, and files of activists. Although no arrests were made, many activists were served with subpoenas to appear before a grand jury. The raids were carried out under the auspices of a joint terrorism task force and were especially directed against an organization in the United States by the name of Freedom Road Socialist Organization, a radical Marxist group which carries out solidarity work for Palestine and Colombia. Since the Patriot Act and subsequent legislations have given the FBI a blank check to spy on Americans, law enforcement agencies have taken the opportunity to cast as wide a net as possible over the legal activities of American citizens who advocate for the change of American policies abroad and at home. The raids demonstrate that the degree to which anti-terrorist laws in the U.S. are being directed against American citizens for the conduct of legal activities. In response to the raids, protests were planned and were conducted all across the United States outside FBI offices today. In other news to the south of us, former CIA Director Michael Hayden is recommending to lawmakers that the United States president should have the power to shut down the internet completely in the event of some emergency. It's not clear what sort of emergency would require the state to take complete control of the internet, but the CIA had said measures would be necessary to counter terrorism. Also in international news, Israel's moratorium on building settlements in the West Bank came to an end at 12 a.m. this morning. On Monday, bulldozers started leveling the ground of 50 homes in the settlement of Ariel in the northern West Bank, and similar activity was also reported in the settlements of Adam and Aranit. The move signals Israel's complete lack of good faith in the ongoing peace talks of the Palestinian Authority. The move was an open display of a rejection of peace and the continuation of theft of Palestinian lands. That's all we got for news headlines today, brothers and sisters, here in Toronto. You listen to Radio Basics, and Martin and I will be back with the interview with a couple candidates who are running for trustees here in Toronto. And we're going to be talking about the controversial issue of the school closures in Toronto. Radio Basics, we'll be back.
You know what I'm saying? KRS, vandalizing, you know what I'm saying? With the mic bandits. Boogie down, uptown, you know what I'm saying? Style, check it out.
When I ain't doing the show, or bringing all the money in, or at the studio, or home studying, I'm checking out Funk Master Flex on cassette, as he wrecks turntable sets with many subjects. Up next, the blast hosta connects the larynx to a high-tech mindset, you get what you get. Tech and sway index of singles is complex. One technique set, T-Rex collects a V-Nex.
Escuchando CHRY 105.5, tu estación de radio comunitaria. Escucha en vivo en nuestro sitio web www.chry.fm.
Radio Basics, and we're back here on CHRY 105.5. This is Steve, and I'm here in the studio with Martin.
Hello, listeners. So I'll be your host for this segment. I have two guests on the line with me, and we'll be talking about issues in education and how it will affect your kids. So Chris Glover is a parent. He's a teacher at York University. He's part of an organization called Save Ontario Schools, and he's running for trustee of Etobicoke Centre. Sam Sotiropoulos is also a parent and a member of Save Ontario Schools, and he's running for trustee of Scarborough Agent Court. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Martin.
So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about what is Save Ontario Schools and why it was formed?
Chris, would you like to speak on this?
Sure. Okay. So last December, the board was under reviewing schools in 10 different parts of the city. And so they were planning on closing at least 10 schools through that process. Mm-hmm. And the community communities involved started to get concerned about what they were doing, and they formed a group, and we helped that group to form, and we called it Save Ontario Schools.
Cool. So, Sam, I understand that two schools were closed in Scarborough Agincourt. Can you talk a little bit about what happened there?
Well, in fact, Martin, one school was closed last year.
Okay.
This year, the incumbent, she voted to put the school up for sale.
Mm.
And now there was a move. There was an ARC process which was considering closing a second school in our riding, and that actually encompassed three elementary schools. Now that ARC process came to a stall during the process because the community was just up in arms. There were parents basically running around and getting petitions signed, rousting the neighborhood, getting them out to the meetings, and basically the upshot of it all was that they managed to, with the grassroots upwelling, if you will, of the community, to put off the closures for the time being by recommending that the three elementary schools be converted into K-8 schools.
Mm.
Now, at the end of this process, the recommendation was put by the ARC that these three schools be put be changed from elementary K-6 to K-8 schools. And the final recommendation that went to the board left it kind of open-ended because they basically stated, the board submission basically stated that this ARC was kind of muffled, that they didn't actually come to the conclusion I suspect that they were hoping for, and that they left the possibility open to return at some point in the future and widen the scope of the ARC, which would likely include more than just those three schools. So we managed to hold them off for the time being, Martin, but
yeah,
there's still work to be done.
Well, that's good to hear that the parents were able to put up that fight and get that result.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, what are the TDSB's future plans with school closures?
Well, the plan is to close at least another 60 to 80 schools. They've already closed 40 over the last 10 years.
Wow.
And so there's another 60 to 80 that are going to be coming up on the chopping block. And the way it's happening, if I can just go back a little bit, in 1998, the board, the funding formula was first released. The province took control of local education taxes, and they introduced a funding formula. And the funding formula did not provide enough money to maintain the schools that we had. And so the board looked at the funding formula, they crunched the numbers, and they said, you know what, with this funding formula, we have to close 138 schools across the city. And they released a list, the board and the trustees at the time released a list of the 138 schools that would have to be closed unless the funding formula was fixed.
Mm.
And so there was this mass uprising to stop the school closures, and communities got together and they saved most of the schools. There were somewhere around 20 to 30 schools closed at the time. And the Liberals were strongly opposed to the school closings. Like, they were leading the vanguard in the fight against school closings, and the Minister of Education, or the most recent Minister of Education, Kathleen Wynne, was a parent at the time, and she was going around, you know, giving speeches about that, you know, these schools should not be closed. Anyways, the Liberals are basically have the same funding formula in place, and so the board is under the same kind of financial pressure to close and sell schools. And so they, instead of doing it all at once, you know, releasing a list of 138, they're actually picking them off a few at a time, and they're doing it in different parts of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so when a school is targeted for closure, what they do is they create a committee. This is according to this is following provincial guidelines. They form a committee with three or four schools, representatives from three or four schools. And one trustee has described these committees as a game of survivor. You know that someone is going to get kicked off the island, you know? And so it's just a matter of who. So once you've got this ARC committee in place, it's a divide and conquer process. And the board is planning on closing another 60 to 80. So there's going to be a number of ARCs coming up. Right now it's been postponed, but after the next provincial election in the fall of 2011, that's when we're really going to see a lot of school closures, unless the funding formula is fixed.
You guys are both candidates for trustee in the next round of elections municipally.
Yeah.
So let me put a tough question to you, because, and this is a question I think that really every single person running for office in this elections should be, the question should be put to them. And in fact, this is a question that really should be plaguing municipal politics, I mean, all across North America. And that's the question of, to what extent is the problem that Toronto's in, the financial problem, the budgetary problems, a result of higher levels of government? As you say, this funding formula has really conscribed, really set some tight parameters for the Toronto District School Board. So to what extent is this a problem from above, and what is it that we can actually do about it?
Tim? Well, whether or not it's a problem from above, at this point in time, what is happening is there's definitely a pressure on the board that's largely in place due to not only provincial pressure, but the board itself has, in fact, they've passed a capital plan for the next 5 years of $400 million. And it's largely money that they do not have. So they're basically in a position where they need to sell these schools in order to accomplish their plan for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. So this pressure is sort of kind of a self-created pressure, if you will. The board has put itself under this constraint. Although, as Chris did rightly point out, the current funding formula is inadequate to the needs of the schools themselves. One really good example of just how inadequate this funding formula is, there's monies that are earmarked for the operation of the school office in every school, and that amounts to $7 per student, which in a school of, let's say, 300 students, is $2,100. Now, running a school office with $2,100 may get you maybe, you know, a half a year's worth of photocopies, but that's about it. So there's this huge, I guess, gap in terms of the real world and what it really will take to run these schools and to basically take care of the day-to-day needs in terms of whether it be administration of the schools themselves. Another cut I want to mention, actually, is a $3 million cut to special needs this year, which went largely unremarked and unannounced, which the province, again, did not justify in any way, shape, or form. So I guess in many ways, you know, the notion that this is something that has descended from above and has somehow become an issue due to the multi-layers of government is sort of, I guess, maybe missing the mark, really, because what we're talking about here is how our tax dollars are being spent on probably our most important public institution, and that is the education of our youth for the foreseeable future. And honestly, I mean, the city of Toronto, the projections for population growth in the city of Toronto, we've heard one astronomical number that was mentioned by one of the candidates who's campaigning for mayor, where it was mentioned that they're planning on increasing the population by as much as 1 million people in the next 10 years. Well, if we do the math and bring 1 million people into this city in the next 10 years, but we're selling off school properties, then we'll be in a little bit of a dearth as far as, or more than just a little bit of a dearth, as far as facilities to school forthcoming generations. And, yeah, I mean, what's happening here is we're looking at short-term, lack of long-term visions of where education should be heading. And I think the biggest problem within this scope and within this issue is the representation or lack thereof, if you will, of the communities in which the schools reside. Mm-hmm. Because a school is put in a neighborhood for a reason. It's not just arbitrarily thrown here or thrown there, and it's actually the heart of a community. And this is what, you know, we need to start inculcating both in our, I guess, political discourse and in just general, I guess, our representative government. I mean, we need to choose representatives who view our schools as important and fundamental aspects of our society. We don't, you know, I mean, we're not going to shortchange our future. It's
Sure. So bringing up representatives who are closer to people, maybe one step in that direction. But let's deal with these larger issues just for a moment before we come back to some of the local ones. You know, during the G20 summit here in Toronto, while, you know, the media was just depicting the same cop car burning over and over again, G20 leaders were, you know, basically coming to a consensus behind closed doors, far away from the people, that we are moving into the age of austerity. We're moving into an era of austerity where it's precisely programs like these that the state would redistribute its basically priorities, its fiscal priorities, away from social needs of the masses and towards, you know, tax cuts and, you know, other corporate subsidies that only ever seem to be on the increase. So really, in addition to having these local candidates who have closer connections to the people, there's this big backdrop that, you know, we all know is neoliberalism. So how is it in a city, in municipal politics, how can people actually challenge and work within this broader structure? What is it that people actually need to do to confront these issues?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah, maybe, Chris, we haven't heard from you in a second.
Sure. Okay. This is one of the concerns. I mean, the larger political picture of what's going on. I mean, certainly when I'm talking to parents, I've talked to quite a few parents who have pulled their kids out of the public school system and moved them to the private schools. And I hate to see that because it diminishes the public education system. And the things that they're concerned about have to do with cuts, and the cuts are stemming from the provincial funding formula, which just does not provide adequate funding, especially for the maintenance of our school buildings. You know, there was a report put out by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives about a year ago, and it calculated that our funding since 1998 per student, when you adjust for inflation and the costs that have been added on by the province, we're down about $500 per student per year. So in a school of a high school of 1,000 students, that's a loss of $500,000 per year. And this is why, you know, there's these constant cuts. Like every spring in the budget debates, the board comes up when the province releases the money to the school board. We come up with another shortfall. And it's a shortfall the last few years has been between $40 and $80 million a year. Mm-hmm. And so each year the board is looking at, you know, well, we're going to cut 50 education assistants, or we're going to cut this many custodians. And the cuts continue, and it diminishes our system, which is really unfortunate because, you know, it is, as Sam was saying, you know, our public education system is the heart of our community. And it's also been for 150 years the source of our economic prosperity. And, you know, the mission of the Toronto District School Board states very clearly that their goal is to prepare students to be citizens in a democracy. So it's the foundation of our democracy as well as our economic prosperity. So to see our public education system diminished is a real shame, a crime, in fact.
Okay, yeah, So what is it that we need to do? What is it that needs to be done to actually, I know that, you know, you're both activists in addition to being candidates for trustees. So what do you propose people should be doing to actually, you know, challenge this process and these moves?
Well, I think, if I may, Chris, I'll just interject here. I think one of the things that people definitely need to do is get informed about the issues around schools. There's a lot of platitudes oft repeated in the media relating to schools, and, you know, there's a huge, I guess, a gap in terms of what's going on in the schools and what's actually being reported. And a good example of that would be yesterday I was reading news in the Toronto Sun, and one of the former trustees, he's now running for council, stated explicitly that the board has not painted, and this goes to the deferral of maintenance that Chris was talking about, the board has not painted a complete school in the last 12 years, since 1998. And we learn about it now. I mean, this trustee, or former trustee who's now running for council, had every opportunity in the past 12 years to let us know. And so have many of the other trustees. In fact, all of them have pretty much remained mum for the past 12 years while voting to defer maintenance. And understand this, deferring maintenance means schools have roofs that are leaking. There's mold forming under carpets in libraries. Yeah. There's a whole host of issues out there, which are essentially and quite very potentially safety hazards.
Yeah.
You know, which has led to a general, I guess, decline in public confidence. It may, at least as I understand it, having been knocking on doors now since January 15th, there is a perception out there that things aren't being done. And what people can do is, as I mentioned, get informed about the issues, find out what's really going on, and then, to at least now in an election period, find candidates who are actually going to go to bat for the communities. Find candidates who are themselves, who have vested interests. Parent activists, I think, make the best trustees. They have children. They're involved in what's going on. It would be nice if they also had their children in public school or intended to send their kids to public school. So that would definitely be one way in which people could get involved. And there are other ways. I mean, Save Ontario Schools.
Mm-hmm.
They can, you know, look us up on the web. They can email us and get a hold of us.
Yeah.
They're coming out to some meetings. There's plenty of ways for people. I mean, even organizations can form of themselves within neighborhoods.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I believe that some of the schools that have been prevented from closure so far have been due to the result of the direct action of parents and community members actually raising a big fuss at the ARC meetings. I know Basics News has done a lot of coverage of this. People can check it out on our website, basicsnews.ca. But so, I mean, yeah, indeed, taking action yourselves, organizing yourselves in your communities is one of the
I think that's important, like for people to organize themselves, but I think it's also the role of the trustee. And one of the things that I want to do as trustee is the riding where I am at Etobicoke Center, there hasn't been a ward council for a long time. And what I want to do is get parent reps together once a month, parent reps from each of the schools together once a month. We'll get together. And there's, you know, we're talking in this, you know, in this interview, we're talking about, you know, the maintenance backlog and the school closings, but there's also a lot of really, really good stuff going on in our schools. There's some excellent after-school programs. There's parent involvement through, you know, parents organizing barbecues at the school so that, you know, they get to form a community around the school. And so there's lots of good things going on. So at these monthly meetings, I'm hoping the parents will be able to share ideas about what's happening in their schools, you know, so that they can learn from each other. And I'll also be able to talk about what issues are coming up at the board that are going to affect their schools and their kids. And so that, you know, they'll be informed, and I can tell them, you know, if this is an issue that's of concern for you, this is how you can get involved, you know, so that it becomes a grassroots, a meeting for a grassroots democracy as well.
And I'm just wondering what, with Rob Ford talking about adding more cops in schools, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would say that it's not within the purview of the mayor to make cuts in schools. And whether that's going to be Rob Ford or someone else, I mean, that stands as pretty much the case. Rob Ford is not a sitting board member of the school board.
Sorry. Rob Ford asking to put police into schools.
Cops.
Yeah. I'm
not interested.
Do you want to tackle that?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, they just had a report come out. There was an article in the Star yesterday about how they had hallroom supervisors at some of the schools, and instead of, they changed the role of the hall supervisor. And so instead of being like, you know, police who are making sure the kids are, you know, not in the hall, that they're going to class and everything, they made them into mentors. And so they are forming, you know, sports teams in the schools, and they're part of, you know, they're building a community in the school, and they're part of that community. And so, you know, carrying a stick or using a stick to get kids to class, you know, can often backfire because you'll just get resistance from the teenagers. But if you, you know, build a community that the students feel they're a part of in the school, then they'll want to be in class. You know, so I think, you know, building the community around the school with the parents involved, with the, you know, students involved, and making sure that there's lots of good activities going on in the school is a much better way of you know, managing the school.
Mm-hmm.
If I may add to that, Martin, I was at a school, and the school happened to be a high school, and this is some years ago, and there was a hall monitor. This was before the age of sending the police into schools. And this gentleman, he was well known. He was obviously very friendly with all the students. To me, it seemed he was one of the gang, if you will. He knew them all by name. There was definitely a feeling where, you know, he was an authority figure, if you will, but he was not a presence or a threatening presence in any way, shape, or form. He was friendly with the kids. He did not carry a sidearm. And he was generally, I thought, a very positive influence in the school. And in fact, he was the one who took me around the school on a little bit of a tour. And I thought that that particular, I guess, station in the school was actually quite a valuable one. I mean, I don't particularly ascribe to, you know, any specific school of thought insofar as how our schools ought to be in terms of discipline and general, I guess, order, if you will. I think that, as Chris rightly mentioned there, you'll probably get a lot more with honey than you'll get with vinegar.
So do you, for the record, do you guys have a position on the presence of police in schools, which has started over the last couple of years?
Go ahead, Chris. It's a difficult question because it depends on the school and it depends on the situation in the school. You know, I think it's a pretty rare situation where you would want to have police presence on a regular basis. I think having, you know, the whole idea of community policing and building bridges between police and you know, youth is important. Schools, you know, one place that can happen. You know.
Well, we're broadcasting out of the Jane and Finch community where, you know, the Tavis unit is coming very strong into the community, trying to organize the community around its programs in the neighborhood. And there is a very, very active opposition to the increasing presence of police in the neighborhood and the kind of community policing links that are being created increasingly is creating a lot of hostility and suspicion. And in some cases, actually exacerbating the violence. But that's another issue. We're almost out of time, Chris, Sam. So just to wrap up, maybe our listeners may be interested to know, do you have any candidates you would stand behind or endorse in this upcoming municipal elections?
I would stand behind Chris Glover.
Yes. For sure. I'll stand behind Sam, actually. I'm hoping that we're both on the board. I think we could, you know, make some real change at the board.
What about for mayor? You guys have any thoughts?
I'm undecided.
Undecided?
I haven't sifted through all the material. I'm involved in the campaign myself, so yeah. I haven't really had the time to sit down and look at the hard numbers that any of these candidates are presenting, so I can't, at this point, make an informed decision. I'll choose to plead undecided at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Running in my first campaign, I can't tell you how busy it is. Insanely busy. There's 100,000 people in my ward, and I'm trying to talk to as many as possible before the October 25th. So,
well, thanks so much for being with us here tonight, Chris Glover and San Sartoropoulos.
Okay, well,
all right.
Thank you very much for having us. Call us again.
Okay, take care.
Yeah, take care.
Have a good night.
You're listening to Radio Basics on CHRY 105.5. We were just talking to two trustees, candidates for trustee here in Toronto, raising the problem of school closures, the budgetary problems that are giving rise to the school closures, and really looking at the political and economic context of these closures and the current, the upcoming municipal elections. And I think a question that we all have to be asking ourselves and demanding answers from those who are running for office, and in fact, a question that we should be really researching, investigating ourselves, is, you know, what is the foundation? What's the basis of this current economic crisis we're in? You know, as I said a little earlier in the show, the G20 leaders promising an age of austerity for essentially the majority of people. That means cutbacks in health, in social services, in education. And this alongside increasing tax cuts for the richest and increasing profit margins for the rich. So, you know, there is a context to the crisis that municipalities are in, the budgetary crises, where police budgets are constantly increasing, military budgets are constantly increasing, yet spending for the people is constantly decreasing. So, I'm not encouraging anybody to vote any particular which way, and the trustee candidates that we had on the line tonight, it's not necessarily an endorsement of their work, but a critical dialogue of the situation that people are in, that we're in our city, coming up to the municipal elections on October 25th. But we really got to be asking this question of basically interrogating neoliberalism in the economic context that we're going through right now. So you listen to Radio Basics. We're going to go to a commercial, come back with some tracks, and we'll conclude the show in a little while, just before 9. Following Radio Basics is Every Day I Have the Blues. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Foster, and you're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM.
Now listen here, before I disappear, if apocalypse is near, never fear, laku laku with the spear, girl, I got you with the beer, so cheers to my folks, so my chariot is here, gotta go, gotta go, got a whole lot of poems in my scroll to mama bust, I've turned them into gold, like Nanny with the gloves or Midas with the touch, I told them not to fuss, got my mind on my money, but the money's not enough, what a pile of debt not arriving yet, but I bet you'll see that soon, bullshit we do for the change in a buck or two, it's nothing new. But a change gon' come, and it ain't no fun. No butter, no guns, nobody to run to with a check, 1-2. I hope this goddamn check come through, come on.
Repeat, I will pass the game. Blind and if and done, we become pledge allegiance to a land that we are not from. But our heart it beats with the rhythm of the drum, so our spirit penetrates suburban slums. Some led astray by the way they perceive, live to please those who would scatter the seeds like leaves that fall in autumn, leave barren trees. We follow those who lead instinctively, like bees to their queen, the blind faithful leap. Some fall from the company they keep, but truth by any other name it smells as sweet. Lord knows that ignorance is the bride of deceit. What my hands do, prayers in my heart. I am lonely when they tear apart. One and only, pray your life away. See the action of what God's name. If the voice of truth spoke in whispers, how would anyone hear? We point fingers to single out the insincere, and the poets make a notice what to most is clear, that only a coward screams that he knows no fear. The bold hold their tongues quiet and kept, they'll say that they're afraid while taking the first step. They'll say they fought for freedom while breathing the last breath, but when the world begins to feel right, they choose to turn left. Some burn their flesh and find warmth in the fire, by the same token you may find truth in a liar. Know the proof of a liar is the way they can spiger, in the same way that lust is the proof of desire. Depending on what it is you believe, truth isn't swagger like youth is naive. We know life is stifling with fight to breathe, caught grappling with thoughts that we cannot conceive. What my hands do, cradles in my heart. I am lonely when they tear apart. One and only, pray you light the way. See the action, oh, for God's sake. Our name's now spoken clear and sharp as broken glass. But like the flesh itself, so too in time our titles pass. Our descendants, they may forget all the tales we've told. Insignificant, still infinite as every soul. 6 billion voices calling out. Infinite choices, surely full of doubt. The only constant that we know is constant change. Out of your control in search of all the things. Our names, they weigh heavy on your mind like shame, cascading through your town with a sound like rain, circulating underground like a subway train. Our voices slowly riding over tracks again, with the rhythm of the wisdom that spurs the change. Understanding of the poetry of pleasure and pain, and demanding a solemn moment for the innocent slain. Their blood calls from the sore like the brother of Cain. We are able now to know a soul that does not rest. The spirit doesn't eat the same food as the flesh, though some are not thinking, making living a mess, while others are not living, never thinking of death. The strife of life, it is burden to bear it. If learning is earning, the meek shall inherit the earth. Still prosperity's inside of the soul, out of chains, out of bounds, out of your control.
We're fighting for justice for Alwi, 'cause no one cares about the pain of his family. Is it 'cause we get our beliefs from TV and dream of living like they do in the movies? Yeah, this is Micaiah, and you're listening to Radio Basics on 105.5 CHRY, revolutionizing radio.
You heard from on that set, Blue Scholars, New People was the first track after the commercial break. You heard from Ian Kamau, One Only. A plug from Micaiah, our very own reggae singer, also part of Basics, former host here on CHOY with Radio Basics. And that was just MIA, The Message. Before we conclude tonight, we got a few community announcements. Martin, want to take it away?
So September 29th, that's Wednesday, Health for All is putting on an event called Cutting Deeper, the Age of Austerity and Implications for Health. That'll be at 150 College, room 103.
Saturday, October 2nd, 2010, 7 p.m., we have an aid for Tobul, which is it's a fishermen's community, a fishermen union out in Chile that was devastated by the earthquake, which was when was that, last year or earlier this year? I think that was in the winter, right? So there's a fundraiser this coming Saturday. You can check out more information about that. We'll be posted to the Basics website tonight. It's going to be held at the Lithuanian Community Center, 1573 Bloor Street West at Dundas Street West. $15 in advance for tickets and $20 at the door.
Also on Saturday, the Campaign for Free Transit will be having a street party. No fare is fair. So that'll be taking place at 1 to 4 at Christie Pitts.
And then on Saturday following that, Saturday, October 9th, 7 p.m., there will be a 30th anniversary celebration for the Farabundo Martí National Liberation Front, which is El Salvador's leading revolutionary organization, a coalition of parties and revolutionary organizations in El Salvador. Also, the ruling government is right now, basically... there's a lot of social violence in the country still, despite the advancing revolution. And in essence, the gangs in El Salvador have basically declared war on the government. They refused to demobilize themselves after the government a couple weeks ago declared them illegal and that they have to demobilize. They indicated that they're going to carry out terrorist actions against the state, including assassinations, bombings, a very dangerous, very precarious situation in El Salvador. But nonetheless, the people are moving forward, marching forward, and the FMLN will be celebrating its 30th anniversary Saturday, October 9th, 7 p.m. at Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street in Toronto. And I would also really implore people to go and check that out, because the Canadian government has recently made a move to criminalize activists with the FMLN, or at least open the floodgates to do so by attacking a refugee of here in Canada, a resident of British Columbia for 13 years, Jose Figueroa. He's been here for 13 years under refugee status, and they're now trying to deport him on the claim that because he was involved with the FMLN and was involved in activities with it before he came to Canada, that he is a terrorist and it's a terrorist organization. More and more, day by day, Canada is just exposing themselves in this war on terror to be basically a war on the people. So go out to that celebration and join FMLN activists here in Toronto.
And lastly, on October 10th, there'll be the Pilgrimage to Freedom, Breaking the Chains of Indentureship. So this will be supporting migrant workers and allies who will be marching from Lenington to Windsor, Ontario, to call attention to the living and working condition of migrant workers who grow and process our food this Thanksgiving. So they're looking for support with donations, also to march in solidarity and to spread the word. For more information on that, you can check out www.justiciaformigrantworkers.org.
That was Leamington, Ontario. And
Leamington.
And that's incredibly important at this moment as well, not only because the number of migrant workers in Canada, in Ontario, just really down, walking up and down our streets on a day-to-day basis is increasing. And it's incredibly important that there is justice for these workers, not only for them, but for the entire working class. You know, an attack on one section of the working class is an attack on all, because if they can push one section of the working class's wages down, be that, you know, the better paid and more secure public sector workers, or be that the most exploited and oppressed migrant workers, then all sections of the working class will feel that pressure, that downward pressure. So we must struggle together. And at this moment as well, because a couple weeks back in Owen Sound, Ontario, 2 hours north of Toronto, a couple of Jamaican migrant workers died when they inhaled some toxic fumes. And I know Justicia for Migrant Workers is mobilizing around that issue right now as well. You can look them up on the website, Justicia for Migrant Workers. Google that and you'll find them. So it's incredibly important that people pay attention to these issues, get involved, learn more, do what you can, stay plugged in, and of course support Basics Community Newsletter, Basics Community News Service, and CHRY, which is the radio station that allows us to have this show, an incredible listener-driven and member-driven radio station based out of York University, but in essence run and funded by the people to such a large extent. So we really need your support. You know, CHRY is going to be having its annual fundraising drive coming up in October. Look forward to our people listening in and contributing pledges to help support the show. And again, support us. And if you want to learn more about Radio Basics as well, feel free to contact us at basics.canada@gmail.com. And you can also check us out on the web at basicsnews.ca. That's all we got for tonight for Radio Basics. I'm Steve.
Marta.
And yeah, check us out next week, 8 to 9 p.m. Every week, Mondays, 8 to 9 p.m. here at CHRY 105.5. Much love, Toronto. Good night. Radio Basics, we're out.
Tell the people what you're here for.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble, trouble, trouble,
trouble. Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Experiencing